I had this horrible experience after I got high, and I remember him just laying there, and I swear it was the devil himself. Like, I freaked out. I was sitting there, I started rocking, my eyes were like bouncing around in my head, and he was just sitting there getting off watching me like.
The Lose Control Podcast, a paradox to peaceful, positive living that contains raw honesty and uncensored emotions. Matty I here. Thank you for listening to the Lose Control Podcast. We're so super excited that you're all here today. We will hear inspiring stories from darkness to redemption that embrace the journey of living life on life's terms. Help you find forgiveness of oneself, wipe away the dripping darkness of negativity, and allow the light of a higher calm to enter your life, leading to the discovery of your purpose. Jessica Apple, I am a survivor. Jessica is a survivor of ongoing sexual trauma in her childhood home by the hands of one of her brothers and her sister. Jessica began her daily drug and alcohol use by the time she was 18, which led to using crack and spiraling into her darkest season, the use of meth intravenously. Jessica has been serving for the last 4 years with the leadership team at Celebrate Recovery and is currently the woman's ministry leader. Jessica's calling is to reach one person at a time in hopes to be a light on their path of recovery and to show people the love of Christ. Recovery has given her an opportunity to become the woman God created Jessica to be and to become the mother her son deserves. Good afternoon, Jessica.
Hello, thanks for having me. Yeah, so I'm excited to be here. But yeah, just to get started where I came from, my mom, a single mom in the military, raising 4 children on her own. I am the baby. And so with her working all the time, kind of left me in the care of my brothers and my sister. And as a result, there was some sexual trauma that happened. There's an isolated incident that occurred with my sister, I think more of just a curiosity thing when I was about 5 years old. But then my youngest older brother, we're 18 months apart, started coming into my room at night. And so there's just some sexual trauma. I don't really remember like when it all started. I guess my brain has protected me from that initial.
That.
Yes, it does. And I'm thankful sometimes.
Right.
But there's, it went on for so long till I was about 13 years old and we weren't living under the same house anymore. And so that was just always that secret. That was my secret that I held on to as a little girl. And yeah, so it created a lot of problems for me. Didn't know what was going on. So I started acting out as a result. I had a lot of anger issues growing up. I would show out in school, and in middle school, I started getting in fights and things like that for real, no reason at all. I remember seeing a girl one time just walking past me and she had like stole my boyfriend or something. And I just saw her and like that rage, you know, like kind of a blackout rage, which happened a lot throughout my life, but just started wailing on her face. And,
how old was this when this rage really?
It started young.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just got worse when I got older, but it was really young. And that was, as I've gone through recovery and things like that, I've learned that that was my way of like trying to get somebody to notice me. You know, I was surrounded by people going to school, my family, and like nobody saw me. And so I was like, somebody like asked me, are you okay? What's going on? But instead I just got labeled as the bad child. And I was the problem child and hard to love child because I'd act out and things like that. So yeah. That was younger years. And I remember at a really young age, just with boys, like messing around with them, doing things that, you know, no 8 and 9 year old child should be doing. But it was, because I was sexualized at a young age, I started acting out in those ways with my friends, with boys. And, so yeah.
Were you latchkey children with mom and dad around, or what was?
Well, my dad's not in the picture. Okay. I don't know my dad. My mom's been married, divorced 5 times.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, my 2 older siblings, they were out of the house by the time they were like 16. And so at one point it was just me and my other brother living at the house. And so, yeah, we pretty much took care of ourselves and raised ourselves. They tried to raise me, but you see how that turned out. And so just learning how to survive on my own.
Yeah,
and,
learning how to survive,
so, right. Yep. And that was kind of my childhood. I discovered Jello shots in the fridge one day. And it was like, oh, those are yummy, you know? And so we started eating them. And just, I remember the feeling that I had. I was getting drunk and didn't even realize, probably about 9 or 10 years old.
Right.
Yeah, and I thought it was just jello and wasn't really sure. Of course, later on knew what it was and figured it out. But I love the way that the alcohol made me feel. It was so at 10 years old, I realized that there was something out there that could make me feel better than being myself, if that
Yeah.
makes sense. And
Yeah.
so yeah, I got my first taste of alcohol really young, and I've loved it. I still love it, but I don't drink it because I love it and allergic to it. But
Yes, we are.
yeah, and I started smoking at a young age too. I was probably about 9 years old. My mom smoked. I would steal her cigarettes, and I had a friend who parents owned a restaurant, and they had those old timey cigarette machines where you just put the money in and like crank the thing, and it would come out. And so they'd be in the back working, and we'd save up our change and Camel no filters.
Nice.
Yeah, started
That's
smoking
awesome.
those, and yeah, we'd go out in the back of the alley and just smoke cigarettes. Yeah, and steal alcohol if we could, and
Did you were
yeah,
you
so
did, how was school for you? Was it did you attend school? Were you
yeah, academically I was great in school. I always have been, even graduated high school, top 10 in my class, got a full ride to college.
Wow.
But my emotionally, I was not very mature. And like I said, I was acting out. I'll always remember my fourth grade teacher, but that's probably the worst time in my life. And I'm not real sure. And I think maybe that's when I started having my period and stuff like that. But I would,
Is it just a feeling that you have that that was not a good time? Or
yeah,
do you?
something was just different about my fourth grade year. And I don't know
I
why.
had just talked about
Yeah.
that in my when I told my
Yeah.
story that I couldn't remember much.
Yeah.
If anybody understood what I meant by, I have a feeling
Yeah.
of, I
Yeah.
recollect that it was a
Yeah.
good time or a bad
Yeah.
time, but I don't remember specifics.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. And I think trauma stores itself in our bodies and
yeah,
we don't always recognize. But
right.
yeah, something was different that year. And so I had so much trouble in school. And I remember coming back from band one day. I got kicked out of band and I came back to the classroom. And there was other students in there that weren't in band. And I just went in there, like threw my clarinet across the room. And I flipped over a desk, and I don't remember everything that happened, but I always remember her because she knew that I was struggling. I don't know if she knew why or not. I don't know why people didn't look into that, but she would always let me redo anything that I did wrong or that I lashed out. Like she'd stop the entire class and be like, "Jessica, I need you to go pick that up, pick up the desk. I need you to walk back outside this room, and then I need you to walk back in a calm manner." And so she would give me an opportunity to correct my behavior. But that was the first person who ever I felt like noticed me and gave me a chance to like do something right and like paid attention to me. I felt like she saw me, if that makes sense. And so she was trying to help me. And but that's just a special memory I have, yeah,
Well,
of
those
childhood.
are
But
with a 16 year old daughter and looking back on me going through school, there are not too many of those teachers. There really aren't. If you look over time, but
Yeah, and I've actually got to reconnect with her
oh,
before
that's
a
awesome.
few years, few years ago. Well, maybe more than a few years ago, but I found her on Facebook, and I was able to reach out to her and tell her just how much she had, left an impact on my life, and that I still remembered her. So that was cool. Yeah,
Yeah.
but
And what grade
yep,
was that now? That was
fourth
the fourth
grade.
grade, right?
Yep. So yeah,
So you start with Jello shots in eighth grade
yeah,
or eight years old,
well, about 9 years old,
nine
ten.
years
Yeah,
old,
but yep,
and then
yep.
we move on from there. I think I read in your bio you hopped up on you pretty quick, alcohol.
Yes, that was so. I was in Oregon. My mom met somebody. This was the summer of after my eighth grade year, and my mom ended up moving away. And she gave us the option, you can stay or you can go. Well, we stayed
Stay with
behind.
who?
I stayed with my sister. My brother went and lived somewhere else. So it was kind of bittersweet. I was no
How old
longer,
is
my
your?
sister were 8 years apart.
Oh, okay,
Yeah.
yeah. Those are my siblings like that too, way
Okay.
up on.
Yeah. And so I ended up going to live with my sister, and my brother went somewhere else, which was a win because we were no longer.
Right.
And that's when the sexual abuse finally stopped. But I went to live with my sister, and she was young, husband had a child. And so alcohol, was readily available. I could babysit and get me a six pack of beer, really easy. That was my payment. And then she introduced me to marijuana. And so that's when I moved up from alcohol and started smoking marijuana. And yeah, so there was some sexual abuse that happened there too with an older guy that they had living in the back of their house, took advantage of me when I was drunk one night. And so, but yeah, so I did that. I eventually, after my freshman year of high school, I moved here to South Carolina and actually moved in with my mom and the guy that she was with. And he was an alcoholic. So guess what? There was still alcohol available for me. And so I would, you know, sneak it. I mean, nobody ever noticed that it was gone or anything like that. So alcohol has just been, yeah, probably my biggest hang up. But so in high school, I was kind of that girl. I would eat lunch in the bathroom stalls, had trouble making friends, tried to play basketball, but really just kind of poured myself into my schoolwork, but still drinking. Sometimes I could get my hands on some marijuana and I'd smoke, but really I was just a closet drinker at that point. And
you drink in school?
No, I never took it to school. Yeah. No. Yeah. I never took it to school.
We would drink on the back of the bus on the way to school.
No.
And then we figure we could, we calculated like, this in high school, you know, so 10th grade. And we figure, you know, if we steal from mom and dad's liquor cabinet and you could drink X amount, and that would keep me drunk till like fourth period. And then, you know, so we kind of even at that young age of 14 and 15, you kind of calculated with the drinking. I'm, you know, of course, that was, I think, the only time in my life that I was some sort of governor on my drinking.
I got you. Yeah. And I think too, I didn't really feel like I mean, I didn't enjoy high school, but it was safer being there than it was being at home with my mom, just because it was triggering. It was lonely. And like home has always just been this weird concept to me. And so I think I needed it mostly when I was just by myself and at home. Mm-hmm. And that even carried on into my adulthood. And later on, I'll tell more about that. But I've always very much just been a closet alcoholic, a closet, you know, substance user. And so, but anyways, fast forward a little bit. High school was kind of, you know, I said, just kind of drinking on my own and stayed out of trouble. Graduated top 10 in my class.
I saw that. That is just absolutely amazing.
I got a full academic scholarship to USC Aiken. And so I, you know, accepted it and I went to USC Aiken. and I started working part-time. So I finally had my own money and stuff. And the drinking got really bad, like blackout. This is when I started blacking out big time from drinking, because I didn't know when to stop at this point. And so, and then you're around other people, parties and things like that I never really been to a party before. It was always at home.
What did you want to do? Like, what were your, did you have dreams or an idea?
There was a couple things. My first major was early childhood education, but then I switched over to psychology, and then I had a minor in Spanish because I had a dream of being bilingual. I still have that dream. I still could do it. But I eventually wanted to be a counselor, or go into psychology or something like that. Huh. And and I love kids. And so that was where the early childhood education came into play. But I had dreams. Yeah.
So you followed that to USC?
Yes. And I went for about 2.5 years, but the drinking was really bad. I'm blacking out, going to parties. And I also, there was a couple of people I was hanging out with who were smoking marijuana. So we would never smoke on campus, but we had this little place, it was a hotel not too far up the road, and we'd go park out there at night and we'd roll us a little blunt and we would smoke. And we did it my freshman year of college, we were doing it. And then the second year, we continued to do the same thing, but somebody actually ended up calling the police on us. And so that was my first encounter with the law. And so like we had one cop pull up, and I was with two other people. There's an African-American male and African-American female. And so we actually had one cop, his white male, pull up, and then they had to call a white female cop.
Whenever the second cop shows up, you know we're in trouble.
They had four cop cars parked for a little blunt. Like we had enough to roll a blunt, but I was freaking out in the backseat because I was like, this is not going to end well. I'm going to jail. But luckily they only found like the roach, I guess, that we had left over. And they ended up just writing us tickets, but they had to search us and all that. So I did get a ticket. But I ended up doing PTI, which is pretrial intervention, and got it expunged off my record and stuff, cause I was going to lose my scholarship. You think I would straighten up after that, but I didn't. I eventually met a guy who didn't go to my school. He lived back here. I was in Aiken, but I would drive back and forth to work in Gilbert. And I met a guy who was 10 years older than me. He was a felon and addicted to crack.
Right on,
and
girl.
I thought that I could fix him and change him and just love him into being a better human being.
You felt like the most broken man out there.
I ended up dropping out of college. And so I started working full time, but I was with this guy and I swore I loved him. And
it was a felon for what?
drug possession and manufacturing and things like that. So he was pretty hardcore. But I just took on all his addictions. I was introduced to crack, started,
What'd you think about crack when you tried it? Do you remember the first time he started?
Crack was never really my big thing. I did it a couple times with him, but he got me hooked on, I made the choice to do it, but, doing cocaine. I did like cocaine. But yeah, it wasn't like my favorite thing to do. He was very controlling and stuff too. So it wasn't like he would give it to me when I could have it, you know, but when I started doing cocaine, he would try to control it, but that's when I first started going out on my own and I was finding it myself and, you know, things like that.
A white lady.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't have too many bad experiences like going out and trying to find it myself. I didn't have any trouble with that until later on in life, but so yeah, that was what life was like, just working, doing that. This is when I did start drinking at work and I would.
What work are we doing?
I worked at a grocery store for 14 years.
Doing coke and drinking and working at the grocery store and maintaining your job?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I was very much functioning. And the grocery store used to have a gas station. And so it was very secluded down there. And I had friends who were doing the same thing. We used to get high down there. We'd bring, you know, do lines on the counters when we didn't have customers. Yeah. And I could be inside the store working and have, you know, fruit punch and, whole cup of vodka with a little bit of fruit punch.
Well, beauty of cocaine, and it would, you know,
alcohol
just takes the edge off.
Yeah, and so just very much functioning. Still having a lot of relationship issues, still very angry at the world. So there was a lot of that. My relationships were always unhealthy, even with my friends, because I was very, I just had these outbursts of anger. Like anger has controlled my life.
Yeah. Where were we, what time frame were we? You only went 2.5 years at college, so 21, 22, 23?
Yes, probably about 21, because my son comes into the picture. Yeah, okay. Shortly. Yeah. Right.
And that's, the son is from?
No, this is, my son's not a love child by any means, but I was just going out to bars and stuff like that, and I had met a guy, and so I would call him, hey, you want to go out and, you know, do what we do tonight? And so we'd go to the bar, then we'd end up going home and hooking up, then I found out that I was pregnant, and that was crazy because I was that woman. I don't ever want to have kids. I don't want to be like my mom. So, as much as I loved kids, I didn't want my own. Like I didn't think that I could. So there was a month or so after I found out that I contemplated, you know, whether I was going to have my child or not and what that looked like. And I think I was more afraid of terminating a pregnancy, than I was actually having a child. And so, I did decide to keep him, didn't know how I was going to do it. Told my mom, you know, and first words out of her mouth is, well, I'm not babysitting for you. So I knew right away that, okay, I'm gonna have to do this by myself and I'm have to figure things out on my own. And so I cleaned up for a little while. I stopped using, I drank a little bit while I was pregnant. And I was still smoking pot, but I wasn't doing any hard drugs or anything like that.
So the dad didn't want anything to do with,
he didn't believe that it was his. Oh. He thought I was out sleeping around. And I honestly don't remember if I was or not. I guess I always knew that it was him. But
so he didn't want to take your
care. Yeah. And so dad did come to the hospital when I had my son and we were supposed to do a paternity test and all that, but he didn't show up that day. And so we went 6 years without dad in the picture. And so it was just
How old is your son?
My son is 14. He'll be 15 in December.
And his name is?
Charlie.
Hello, Charlie.
Yes, he is fantastic. And I'll tell a little bit about him in a little bit. But yeah, and so dad was gone the first 6 years and it was just me and Charlie. And everything was pretty steady for a little while. I started doing Adderall after I had my son, because I was like, oh, it's not as bad. All right. In my head, not as bad as all this other stuff. I had energy. I could. And so things kind of settled down a little bit. But a whole bunch.
You have the energy to be a single mom working.
Yes. Woo! Yeah. Cause it's hard. It's really hard on your own. And I was working like 60 plus hours a week just to have enough money to pay my mortgage and my car and all of that stuff. And so, I did what I had to do to survive. And,
amazing addict alcoholic, you know, for that length of time.
Yeah.
And I have burned shit to the ground like three times during this time frame.
Yeah. I don't know. I always call it God's divine protection because there's things I hear stories and I'm just like, God, why didn't that happen to me? It could have so easily happened to me. And somehow I was able to maintain. And, but I was still very unhappy. I was hurting. I was broken inside. Yeah. It wasn't a happy life, you know? And, but Trying to think. So yeah, I a bunch of Adderall and alcohol and no food doesn't mix well. And so I was out at an event. It was a New Year's event in Greenville County, somewhere, Lancaster County. I don't remember exactly where I was. But I had a rage. And so my boyfriend at the time locked me in the hotel bathroom. And I mean, I was just, I broke the toilet. I had punched holes in the wall. And I don't even remember to this day what happened, because he left me and nobody was there to tell me what happened. And so it's just like a blank spot in my, but I just remember the cops came and I went to jail for disorderly conduct and a drunken disorderly conduct, and was thankful they didn't find the drugs that I had in our hotel room. They just came and got me. And so yeah, I spent a night in jail, got out, I guess, on my own recognizance. And when I went to court, the police officer actually didn't
show up. Was there anybody around? Yeah. So when you were, when Charlie was just left by himself? Or,
we have, you know, this wonderful couple in our family who have been with me since I was 18 years old. They're not family, but they're family.
I got you.
And so they've helped me with my son. I used to live with them. And so they've seen everything, even to this day.
And working your 60, 65 hours,
they would help take care of him. Yes. Yeah. And so I guess I didn't do it all by myself. I said that I did, but I did have them taking care of Charlie. And so, yeah, I ended up going to court thinking I was going to get charges and stuff, but the police officer never showed up. And so I was found not guilty, even though I was very much guilty.
Right.
And so that was just another big thing in my life. I cleaned up for a little bit. That was kind of my MO. When I'd get in trouble or things got really hard, I would straighten up a little bit and try to get my life back on track. I was kind of in and out of church. And that's another thing. My faith is very important to me, and yeah. I am a believer in Christ. And, but just that shame, a lot of it just from trauma, that I just had this shame cycle going on in my life, and never feeling good enough, never feeling worthy. And like, nobody loves me. Like, my own mom didn't, and my dad's not here. Like, who? And so relationships are hard. Was really lonely. And just fast forward some, another guy came into my life. And I was,
and where are you at this, how old are you at this point, roughly?
I 2015, so I was
okay,
late 20s.
And you said, yeah, your faith was important to you, so
yeah.
Did you go to church when you were younger?
Okay, yeah, I'm glad you asked that.
Because I was just wondering, with single mom, your mom, and she didn't seem like she was really in the picture a whole lot. How did you get to church and know anything about God, or, you know? Yeah,
I'm glad you asked that. Every place that I ever moved, and this, again, I feel like God pursuing me since I was a little girl, I found friends who went to church.
Huh.
And so I would go with them. And so I've been learning about God since I was a little girl. Mostly Baptist.
Was it like Bible thumping hardcore Baptist?
That's what I'm going to tell you, a story. Oh, okay. I was hurt by the church.
Oh.
My freshman year of high school, when I was living with my sister, because they were in what they call themselves, an independent Baptist church. Now, I don't know all of that. I don't, that's not what it's about for me, but they were very much, you know, skirts and things like that, and certain kind of music you can't listen to, and all of this. And they had a lot of rules, and
like Footloose.
So, yeah. Yes. And so I show up one Sunday, and I'm dressed nicely. I mean, I have these nice pants, slack things on, and a nice blouse, and you know, my hair's clean, I'm brushed and all of that. And but somebody came up to me and told me that I wasn't allowed to wear what I had on. And I didn't have the money to go buy new clothes or anything like
and
that.
And they said, what now?
I wasn't allowed to wear what I had on to church. Yeah. And I didn't know any better. I was a little girl. I was young. I was like 14 years old.
My daughter went to North Baptist Church when she was 14 with her mom.
Yeah.
She wanted to get baptized. They wouldn't baptize her because she said she was gay.
Wow.
And they told her she has no place in that church.
Well, she has a place at Jesus's table. That's, I can
right,
tell you that.
That's right. But I couldn't believe it, you know, that I did anyway. But anyway, so you get one bad taste on it.
Yeah.
And here I am battling with my kid thinking everything's like that when it deals with God and religion.
And
you
it's
know?
Not. And we do not clean ourselves up before we come to God. We go to God and then he helps clean up our lives, if you will. Yeah. But anyways.
We know that.
Yeah, we know that. I wish the world knows that.
Well, that's what...
Yeah,
that's, you know, part of our behind the podcast.
Yes,
you know, there's so much more to it.
And there is,
as we say that this these aren't conversations about drinking and drugging,
right? Yeah,
you know, so
yeah, I had that bad taste and I kind of was turned off. But I moved out here to South Carolina, and I did get connected with some other believers. Again, like I said, just wherever I went, there's Christians were there, people who loved Jesus. And so I had some really good friends, and my youth pastor and his wife really just poured into my life. Those were probably the first people. They would tell me all the time that, Jessica, you're not hard to love. Like, it's so easy to love you. And I had never heard those words before. So I would have bad moments, and they would see me get angry and act out or things like that. And they just loved me. And so I was like, this is what Jesus is like, you know? And so it was when I was, that's when I guess gave my life to the Lord. Now, it didn't mean I lived on the straight and narrow, because all this addiction came after, after this. But through my recovery, I learned that my addiction was really a symptom of something that was really deeply broken and hurt inside of me. And so, but yeah, and so that's where I celebrate recovery and all that comes in. But my rock bottom came when I met that other man, and he introduced me. Well, I was already smoking meth a little bit and snorting it, so I was kind of playing around.
How'd you just even come into the meth? You just met somebody who was doing coke, and they said, hey, try this?
No, I wish I remembered. No, I had friends who they just would dabble in different things. And so it was like, hey, you want to try this? And so that's how I started out, just trying
it. And you snorted it?
Yeah,
and snorted it. And like the greatest thing ever?
Yeah, and then, yeah.
That's how it was for me.
Yeah, no, I liked it more than anything else that I had ever done.
Yeah,
more than the alcohol, I would say. Yeah. But anyways, I met him, and he used the needle. And so eventually, like, I would just be smoking it and stuff, and he would never let me do that. But eventually I kept asking, like, I just want to do it. You're doing it. I want to do it. You know, I don't know if I was jealous or mad or what, but I wanted to be a part of it.
All about.
Yeah. And, but he kept saying no. But I went out to California to see my brother, the one that had sexually abused me. I hadn't seen him in like years and years, and he got married. And so I went out there, and I stayed drunk the whole time. But when I came back, just something in me was like, something changed in me, and I kind of just gave up on life. I think seeing my brother really just affected me in a way that I didn't think it would, because I've been stuffing all this trauma, been hiding and running from it, using substances and whatever it took, and, you know, men and stuff, just not to think about it. But so that was really hard. When I came back, I started shooting up, and it got a hold of me, and I got awful way, and I used pretty heavy for about 2 years. And in those 2 years, definitely the darkest ever. Meth took me into just a darkness that I had not experienced before.
Where's the job? Where's Charlie? Where's all these things that you're able to keep together? A mortgage payment, a car.
He was with me. I was working.
You were able to maintain that shit.
For a minute I did. But like I said, it was so dark. And this man that I was with, he was just, he's evil. And I remember at some point, and he was manufacturing as well on my property. And so there was this whole thing going, and I wasn't into all of that. I wasn't out running the streets or anything like that. Like, I just,
right,
I didn't want to feel anything anymore, you know, like
I was always behind it.
Yeah. And so, but my son was with me all the time. I have a memory of him. He was pretty young. I don't know exactly how old, but I just got done shooting up, and he comes knocking on my door. And I couldn't do anything. Like, I couldn't, I just froze. And so, like, I mean, I sat there probably for an hour, knowing that my son was outside my door, needed something, and I couldn't be there for him. And so that's just that's like a memory that I have. I think at that point, I started knowing that, like, things aren't okay. Like, this is different than anything that I'd ever done. And I remember a time, at some point, the guy started mixing something in my meth, because I started feeling different when I was getting high. And of course, you're just crazy, you're strung out, and I don't know, but you know. And I had this horrible experience after I got high. And I remember him just laying there, and I swear it was the devil himself. Like, I freaked out. I was sitting there, I started rocking, my eyes were like bouncing around in my head, and he was just sitting there getting off, watching me, like, and that's just another memory I had. But it scares me. It makes me sick to this day. And it's just a memory I cannot get out of my head. And I've only actually shared with one other person, but,
big moment.
But yeah. But those two memories, I think, really have driven, there was a starting point of, like, I knew something had to change in my life. And,
year is this? That this eye opening?
I started seeking recovery in 2017. So this, probably about 2015, 2014. Yeah.
Is there maybe further down, but is there suicide ideas, thoughts? So.
I've never wanted to be alive. I mean, I do now. I want to live now. No, I got I'm saying my saying. Whole life.
Never wanted, but anything that it's other than just hating life and not wanting to be here. I mean, doing enough and hoping I wouldn't wake up.
I have mutilated my arm a few times. I don't know if I was trying to kill myself or what I was doing, but I've never attempted.
But it'd be okay if I didn't make it through.
If I could have figured out a way to do it without, I would have done it. If I wouldn't have been so afraid, I would have done it. That's fear has always just run. But it's worked in my favor.
That's
too.
It has. Yeah. I don't know that.
But I've had plans before. I've had it all, you know. And there was even a point in my life. It's like, as soon as my son turns 18, like that's my out, you know, he's not going to be here anymore. He's not going to miss me. And like, that's the perfect time. And so I would fantasize about ways that I can make it happen. That wouldn't be painful or, because like, who was going to care? Nobody cared about me. Yeah. Right. So,
you're better off with that one.
Yeah. And so,
so we're starting to get the feeling that things are fucked up.
Yes. Yeah. And so I had.
And you're looking at the devil across the room. Yes. How do we.
Yeah. And it was hard. I would want to leave, but then I also just had this pull to the meth. Yeah. And like he was the only, like he would prepare everything. And
he's so the Pied Piper.
Yeah. So I started to try to figure out how I can get myself high because I never did all of that myself. He always did it for me. He was very controlling and abusive. And so I kind of messed around with that a little bit. And I mean, it just wasn't for me. And I've always known that this wasn't supposed to be my path. And but just long story short, I ended up leaving. Like I grabbed my son and I left my house.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. I was going to lose it anyways if I didn't get my shit together. And so, and I quit my job and I started doing an outpatient program at Palmetto Health.
And so how you quit your job and you got Charlie? And you said you left your house?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a man in my life. Imagine that. This man had been kind of in and out throughout my whole life. Okay. But I called him and he helped me. He was my rescuer always. So
he was a decent human being.
Yes, he's a decent human being.
For what you were.
Yes. Yeah.
Compared to
everything else. Right on. He really is a good man. But I called him and he came and rescued us. So we moved in with him. And quit my job and he helped me. I had insurance still even after I quit for a little while, so I was able to do the outpatient program and I started going to Celebrate Recovery. Somebody I was in active addiction with had introduced me to Celebrate Recovery, so I was like, okay, I'll go check it out.
So you never did inpatient?
No, I never did inpatient.
Wow, that's an amazing.
I wish I would have though, looking back.
Oh, right. Yeah. But it's amazing where you were at with your use with banging meth and the quantities and this craziness that you were able to come into the light without.
I give credit to God for that because I don't know how I did it. So of course the first year of recovery, even with my outpatient program, I still was smoking meth, but I was able to stop shooting up. And so my life kind of leveled out a little bit, and then I wasn't having to work. And so somebody was taking care of me and things got better. I was still drinking a little bit. And so sometimes that would get out of control, still very angry. But that's when therapy came into play. I started going to counseling and we started digging up all of that crap that led me to all of this crap. And so, so just since 2017, 2018 really is when I finally stopped running. I don't have like a clean date, but, I was like, I'm not going to run away again. Like I'm going to stick this out. And so since 2018, I have just been all about recovery, but just that day, 2018 is important to me because that is when I stopped running. Yes. And like,
I know the day I stopped running. Yeah. Exactly. Right. That's my business.
Yep. And so, I just started working my recovery, Celebrate Recovery. It's a faith-based 12-step program. And it has been my pathway and it has absolutely changed my life.
Cause I'm not really familiar with it.
We are faith-based. And so like, I guess I haven't been to an AA in a long time, but your higher power can be anybody or anything.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And so for us, our higher power is Jesus Christ. So that would be the biggest difference. And we don't introduce ourselves like, hey, I'm an addict.
Right.
We usually introduce ourselves. I'm a child of God.
I like that. doesn't have a negative look on yourself. Not like when I say things like,
I say faith and hope are just words and they're just things you write down. Then people look at me like, how dare you? Yeah. And I said, because all both of them are useless. And unless you do the work behind it.
Yes,
so I have hope, you know, there's hope in my life to move to this step, the next level. Well, there's action that needs to be taken for that hope to actually come to fruition, or I'm just going to be hopeful my whole life. Yeah. Or I have faith in a God. And then, well, and God, I asked for some patience today. Well, that's not just going to all of a sudden, you know, I have to act in a certain way. I have to be, you know, I have to be moving in that direction. And there's steps that need to be done.
Yeah.
So, a lot of it is, you know.
This gap too. I hear people say, oh, just pray about it. And like, God will heal you or just do this. Well, no, I got to put in this work. You know, and sometimes I believe in miracles. Do not get me wrong. So I don't want anybody to misunderstand that. Jesus can heal. And I've heard stories that he just took my desire away. Well, great for you. That's not working for me. Like that's not, he's right not on. Doing that for me. And so, yeah, you have to put in the work. And so that's, I started putting in the work and showing up to meetings, and I worked through 12 steps, which is like a whole year long process in a small group with some other women. And we have these four booklets that we work through, and it really gets to the root of our struggles. And like I said, for me personally, my substance use wasn't even my biggest problem. It was all this other stuff that
my mindset, my perception, my irrational emotions, my rage, my shame, my guilt, that all came, you know, I buried it with alcohol. Yep. So, but that's what I need to be talking about. Exactly. That's what I need to be discussing. Yes. That's what we all need to be talking about. Yep. Not, well, this is how I am today, but I wasn't like that then, you know, and I was like, but let's talk about, you know, how we're working through our emotions and feelings and keeping a positive mindset. Like, what are we doing those actions from yesterday to today? And not metaphorically yesterday, like yesterday, you know what I'm saying? And that's one of the things that I, you know, how I found I've adjusted my sobriety and I have the same. And my sponsor, Russ, he's been in my life for 15 years. That's he understands how my thought process is. You know, and I'm well aware that Alcoholics Anonymous, that is my baseline. That is the base camp for me, you know.
That's good,
but there's some adjustments that I'm not changing the program, but there's just things I see a little bit differently. And I'm allowed to be a little bit different with how my thought process, you know.
So, I love the way you think.
You know, but the fitness thing for me was, for me, was my body is what carries my spirit, my mind, my emotions. That's so it's good for me that I spent all those years destroying it. And I feel like if this is as healthy as it could possibly be, the best I can, I mean, you know, but you know, that's why I train and I do what I do, because if this is really fit and I'm able to see things clear and my mind is clear and I, you know, I just, I get better sleep and all those things seem, you know, for me seem, you know,
that is what I'm working on in my recovery this year is my physical health. I wanted to match my spiritual health and my mental health.
This is one of the most beautiful things as I heard, in a podcast maybe a year ago. And they were using CrossFit, you know, as a recovery tool. And CrossFit is you can be 80 or you can be 18 and you're all in the same group together, no matter you're a triathlete or not, but you're all trained together and you support each other. It's just the 80 year old or the person that's not a super athlete, and their training is scaled for them.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I have to run, you know, 10 hills, you only got to do two. Right. It doesn't matter, you know, but, you know, so you support each other as a group, like we do as a tribe to move forward with That's it. Great. But we also, what we do is we put ourselves in a fictional, stressful situation. So and when you're training and you're running or whatever you're doing physically and you're pushing yourself, you're going to go through the entire spectrum of emotions and feelings, the shitty self-talk.
Yeah.
To you can do it, man.
Yeah.
To I want to quit. Yeah. To you can't quit. To everything, you know, you're happy, you're sad, mad, glad. All of that you're going to go through. Yeah. And you're going to learn to pull yourself in and learn some breathing techniques, you know, whatever.
Rewire your brain.
And right. And now when you now go into, and that's a fictional, stressful situation. Because you can always stop and just stop doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But you can't stop doing life. So I still have to have a relationship with you, with my boss, with my wife, with my kid, with the guy at the fucking standing in front of me at the Zippy Mart that's right to write a fucking check that, you know, whatever, and I lose my shit on it, right? But, you know, those simple little things, and but then I can, I scale it back to, I'm familiar with this emotion, I'm familiar with this feeling, because I do it pretty regularly, so I can then pause, be patient, I can analyze the situation, I can be active on it and not reactive on
That's very
good. That's how I've I've yeah. taken that to, and used it in my life.
That's because, really cool.
You know,
yeah.
So, yeah. you know, so I, people look at me like, and I'm like, yeah, well, I don't have the time. I'm yeah. like, well, yeah. as soon as you say you ain't got the time,
yeah,
you ain't got the time.
Yeah.
You know, so but that's how I use that.
Yeah, article, that's you know? Good. I like
and anybody that,
that
hooks yeah. up with me is yeah. they're on board with that, that this physical approach to
right.
to healing.
That's good.
So
yeah. that's important for trauma survivors, I feel like, oh, because we got to get in touch with our bodies and how it affects our brains yeah. and our emotions. And yeah, I want to get hooked up with you.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, and that's, you know, but, and people are like, I can't train with you, Maddie, because you go, I said, I don't, you come with me to the planet or we go do whatever. I can yeah. go for walks along the river. I don't need to run at Mach 1. We yeah. can go walk and talk, yeah. you know, and then we eventually expand yeah. on our, on how good. We train together, you yeah. know, and I'm not going to take you to somebody to a gym that's not, you know, you'll do something different, but we'll do it together and we help right. each other along. And yeah. I, you know, as I'm pushing myself to the maximum limit, you're coaching me along
you.
And I'm, you're pushing yeah. yourself to your yeah. limit. I'm coaching you along. So we're yeah. raising each, yeah. each of us
each
up.
Each other. You keep it, saying community and
yeah,
each other.
It doesn't matter the level we're at. And just like in sobriety, yeah. just like yeah. they say, the newcomer
yeah.
helps us keep it green and move forward.
It does. Yeah.
You know, I was telling that's them, good. You got to,
yeah.
if you take away something,
you got to replace it.
That, you know, yeah. when, as we replace the heroin or yeah. the opiate with a Suboxone or a methadone, yeah. as Amber talked about,
yeah.
there needs to be education because you can't yeah. just all of a sudden put it in your life and then not have a plan on how you're going to get off it
exactly.
and what you're going to substitute it
yeah.
with.
Yeah. And that was one of my problems. I was not replacing anything with anything. So I was just left with this big old, but I think that's why I kept returning to use and kept returning. I didn't know. I was not educated about addiction. Yeah. Until I did my outpatient program and started Celebrate Recovery. But yeah.
And as we undump all these trauma and emotions and feelings yeah. and all this stuff that we've been actually, it's been sick as it sounds, it's kind of been our negative fuel, but it's kind of moved us along
yeah.
in this destructive manner.
Mm-hmm.
But if we take that away, then we have nothing.
Yep.
Then we are an empty shell.
Yeah.
And in a strange way, it was our identity.
Yeah.
But if we take it away and we find something new to fill it,
yeah.
gotta unlearn to
yes.
learn.
Yep, this is true.
But
yeah.
how, you know, how is that? So how do we do that? Hence we, me and you get together
exactly,
and we have
yeah.
different thought processes,
yep.
you know,
yep.
and these little kids, like I said, balance your emotions and mindset, surround yourself with recovered people, crystallize a plan. Don't just verbalize.
Yep.
I said, she wrote that one down. I was like, right on.
Yeah,
anyway, awesome. keep doing the next, this is the other thing. Keep doing the next right thing.
Yeah.
But let it evolve.
Yes.
Don't run all over it.
Yeah.
And that's one of those sayings that, you know, I kind of, people like, you're not allowed to add to that.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, if I do the next right thing, but I would do the next right thing.
Yeah.
But then I just fucking rush right over the top
yeah.
of it. And the faith part yeah. is when you do that next right thing, the work on that
yeah.
is whatever that's supposed to evolve into.
Yep.
So when I go left, right, left, left, and they're all good decisions, I've
right.
let those, each one of those
exactly.
evolve into what it is.
Yeah.
And then,
that's
you know,
good.
So it's that patience and that 2 second pause to then, or
yeah.
however long it is, it takes a week or whatever
yeah.
the fuck it is, you know, to let it go.
Yeah.
You know, okay. and let it evolve into, and then that's God
yeah.
doing, you know,
yes.
whatever.
Yeah.
But when I run all over it,
yeah.
it doesn't allow the
no,
spirit
it's disaster.
To, yeah, it just
yeah.
goes, you know,
spirit
you go, you destroy
thing.
Anything
yeah.
we
yeah.
can. But
yeah.
anyway, so it was just, again, it helped. That place helped so much, that detox, going there for when I share and
yeah.
I have moments like that,
cool.
that we, that 19-year-old child,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's, you know, in the detox and just, you know, just, you know, they're joking and laughing because that's what they do at 19,
yeah.
you know? I mean, they're still when you're older, but
right.
not so much in my older. I was
yeah.
crying. It was
right.
dark, but, you know, they don't really know what shitstorm's coming their way.
Exactly,
and for
yeah.
them, that I looked up and that whiteboard was just covered with, like,
yeah.
the important pieces of what I've been running my mouth about
that's
for the last
cool.
30 minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this kid's got a chance,
mm-hmm.
man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's all it'll take.
Yeah.
Right? As you said,
yeah.
just to help one person,
yeah.
you know?
That's all it takes, because then that one person's going to go help one other, and it's just this ripple right. effect, and yeah, so, but that's good.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that
yeah.
was sorry I cut
no,
into the
don't
whole
be sorry
thing.
I'm
right
glad
there.
You shared that with me, got me thinking about
something.
Yeah,
yeah, so cool. do we so Celebrate Recovery,
yes, yep. So like I said, faith-based, but I started there in 2017 and I've been there ever since. I very rarely miss a Tuesday night. But it's just been a safe place where I've learned how to have healthy relationships. I learned how to trust people. I learned how to trust men again and know that not all men are bad. And so just have some really healthy relationships. And I think it's those relationships that changed my life. Because I didn't have any of that growing up. You know, I was lonely. I was looking in all the wrong places to be a part of something. And so, but I did a lot of work, and now I'm one of the leaders and one of the ministry leaders for the women over. And so one of my greatest passions is just walking alongside women and coaching them and just being there for them, letting them know that they can do this. And there is, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. And
you're held accountable when you're helping all these women moving forward. You can't fuck up, you know? So at those moments where, you know, I'm feeling on edge or whatever about it, I'm not thinking about going to use, but I'm making, you know, little emotions, and mentally I'm not right. I'm not at, like, you know, what would Jesus do type of thing. You know what I'm saying?
You made me think about something just when you said, you know, we can't mess up. And, but I think even when we do, because it does happen sometimes, I had a crisis in my life within the last year. I had lost my job due to some mental health stuff going on, and I slipped up and I had some alcohol and I smoked some marijuana, and so I became, you know, I was talking suicidal and stuff like that. And so I actually had somebody call for EMS to come out and do, or police come out and do a well check on me, and I was really mouthy with them and stuff. And but I ended up going to Four Rivers for 4 days. And so that whole ordeal, and I'm not going to tell you about my experience because it was god awful.
Three Rivers.
Yeah. And did I say Four Rivers? Sometimes I say that, I don't mean to, but it was Three Rivers.
That's
and
okay.
felt like Four Rivers. But
so for 4 days you go to Three Rivers.
Yeah. And so but anyways, when I got out, like, I, you know, my pastor, who is also the leader of Celebrate Recovery, like, he was, I went to him, and of course I started seeing him twice a week and went back into counseling. Like, I did all the right things to make sure that this situation didn't go back to what it could have been or what it used to be. And so I think when we do mess up or have a slip up, that if we handle it, we have all the tools. I've been in recovery for 7 years at this point. I had all the tools. And so my slip up, I mean, I bounced right back. It wasn't, you know, I don't even like to call it a return to use. It was like, I made a dumb decision out of my emotion, and I picked myself right back up. And, but in that time, I didn't work for 3 months. And that is when I actually got certified to be a peer support specialist, which opened the doors to me working with Celebrate Peers, which is the faith-based recovery community organization that we've started at our church. And it also led me to being able to start working at the Courage Center. And so, like, God even using that slip up to be like, okay, we're not going to stay down, like, get your ass up and let's do what we know that you can do. And so it really kind of just catapulted me into this different path in my life, because I was working at after school programs for a while with kids. And so I had always talked about wanting to do this for a living, because I love working with people. But yeah, so
clicked. This whole, what we have today is what came out of it. And
cool.
It's actually just, you know, I love it, man.
Yeah,
you know?
I can tell you love it.
Yeah.
So
I
that's good.
I like to run my mouth.
No, that's okay. Yeah. That's good. So
it's a beautiful thing that we have
it
here.
Is,
and you know, keep giving it away is what.
Yes. Yeah.
Is what we
And I love just watching people's lives change. Like, it's like, it inspires me and encourages me. And yeah, I think even more so than like seeing my own life change, like when you see somebody else get it together and like do things with their lives. Yeah.
I call them fail safes in place. Yeah. My morning post, that 3 minute deal, you know, it's more for fucking me.
I got you.
Than it is
others,
for, because when I do it, somebody's listening, great, and there's never any fucking ego involved in any of the thing at all. And the podcast, Peaceful Positive Living, that's why I call it Paradox of Peaceful,
I love
Positive
it.
Living. Lose control, right? But I love it, man. And then
it becomes a lifestyle. It's not even,
you know,
it becomes a lifestyle.
It's really cool, man. And then, you know, helping other people has just been so much more than I really thought it would have ever evolved to.
Same here, and now it's my life. Like, I don't want to do anything different. So
now I'm just trying to figure out how to do this all the time.
Yeah,
type of
keep
thing,
doing
you
what
know?
You're doing,
right?
You're
you
making
know,
it happen.
We're moving in the direction, and
yeah,
you know, I'm trying not to rush anything and just let it keep evolving. I say, don't just let it evolve, and so, it'll.
Now I'm gonna start sharing the crap out of your stuff, so get some more followers. And
you know, I just try to hammer it as much as we can, and try to keep it as diverse as we can, you know, and can't emphasize enough on it that this isn't about drinking and drugging.
Right.
Yep. It's just not. Yeah. And
it's a lot more to it.
Yeah. So we have some cool guests coming up too that are, and Nate's is going to come and talk about, you know, and because there's a lot of, you know, I hurt that woman, you know what I'm saying? And I put some PTSD into her life, you know, and things that you don't even know. And that needs to be shared because there's other people on the other side that feel alone that are in it right now.
Yeah.
You're not just me and you that were, you know, busy, you know, you know, we were covering all the shit up.
Right.
Then there's other people that were getting hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. You make me think about the fact that, you know, my son is going to have his own story one day of, you know, what I put him through and the struggles and the things that he saw and stuff. And I'm thankful for my recovery because he's been given the tools now because he's done counseling and gone to Celebrate Recovery. They have a place for the youth and just us having these open conversations about addiction and stuff like that. He now has the tools to hopefully not go down the same path and make better choices. And and
what a fear that is.
Yes. Yeah. So, but then I'll have the tools if something does go wrong, you know, that I'll be able to walk alongside him through whatever he goes through. So, yeah, but the idea and the goal is to prevent all of that. But
Do we have anything on the horizon that something that we're working towards?
Yeah. Well, I did mention to you that our church started that faith-based recovery community organization. And so inside of that, we started a program called Recovery Rides. And the idea behind it is to break the barrier of lack of transportation that people in recovery or seeking recovery have. And so we have a list of drivers, male and female, who we have a relationship with the Courage Center, obviously. And so let's say a participant needs a ride to a coaching session or to a meeting or to a mental health appointment or you name it, a need in recovery, they can call somebody on our driver call list and we'll go pick them up. And so we have all these great resources, but not everybody can get to them. And I mean, online stuff is great, but we need each other like physically. And so being able to provide that transportation so they can be physically present at these places that they need to be. So we're trying to get that off the ground. We got a grant from Deotis to kind of help with that and get it started. And so that's kind of where my heart is right now. I've been working on and just How trying do you advertise to. That? Well, we by word of mouth, we had a thing at our church where we had a lot of different recovery organizations come out and so had interest meetings and things like that. But just keep telling people and. We need drivers, of course. The more drivers we have, the more people that we can reach and the farther out we can expand. So like right now, we're just serving the Lexington area. And then we do serve the Richland Courage Center just because we have that relationship already. And so, yeah, the idea is just to build this up so big that we can reach people all over the Midlands, you know? Yeah. And we compensate our drivers for their time and then reimburse them for their mileage as well. And so, you know, you make a little extra money. I mean, it's not like a full-time job right now, but I mean, it could become so big that it turns into something that. I mean, that's long-term dreaming, but so we're just kind of at the beginning stages and trying to branch out a little bit. Like we have the relationship with the Courage Center, but we're trying to find other organizations that could use our help, you know, like even Three Rivers or outpatient programs that, hey, you know, we have people who can't get here, you know, can you go pick them up and getting with the jail, people getting released from jail, being able to take them to their housing and stuff. But we touch on all topics and that's what I love about CR. It's not just for those in substance use. We have like a trauma and addiction group and that's together. And then we have a codependency group. We have an A to Z group and a behavioral addictions group. And so it's not just about the drugs and alcohol. And
excellent.
Yeah. We see a lot of people who are struggling with their mental health or grief and loss and things like that. And so, yeah, it's not just the substance use. And there's kind of a stigma like, oh, Celebrate Recovery, I don't do drugs. Well, it's still a great place to go because there's other people there who've never used drugs. Yeah. Yeah, but it's just a safe place for us to get community and to seek understanding.
I might be able to jive with this.
Yeah. So that's the biggest thing that I've got going on and being mom. So
to ask Charlie, how's the world with Charlie?
Charlie is good. He's a football player. He's obsessed with football, which is totally fine. He's got the build for it and he's taller than me, starting to grow mustache, you know. He's a little man. But he's good. He's doing pretty good in school and a lot of it just football because he wants to play football. He's keeping his grades up, staying out of trouble. Excellent. And yeah, amazing. As far as I know, not doing any drugs because he gets drug tested at school because of football. And so, just making good choice. I mean, he's not perfect. Don't get me wrong. But and we've had our struggles, but yeah, he's a really good kid and he loves his mom and takes care of me. And
nice.
Yeah. Awesome. So, and it's just, I mean, he sees his dad now and stuff. And so that's good. They have a growing relationship.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, he'll go out there and visit. And of course the summertime, he spends a little more time out there. So that's good that he has his family, aunts and uncles and all that stuff that I never had growing up. And so, which is a big reason why I stayed here in South Carolina, haven't moved away, is because, his family's here and I want him to have that experience.
So it's,
you know,
healthy on that side.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, it's a family. I mean,
I
yeah. And so, but yeah, it's healthy. It's
you.
Okay.
I
yeah.
got you.
I don't
want to
put him down or anything,
no,
but
no.
We're different and that's okay.
Yeah.
So Charlie just has, you know, gets both worlds and he's spoiled and he's loved. And so,
awesome.
So yeah. Yeah. But he's a good kid. I'm blessed. Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Amazing story.
Well, thank
Boy,
you.
Yeah. You've been, the biggest thing I take away is you kept your shit together through some shit.
Yeah, until I didn't.
Well, I know, but I mean,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you, but, it's an amazing story, man. And
but that's all I knew was I had to survive somehow.
Survivor.
And so,
you are a survivor.
So, yes.
I am a survivor.
And I do recover out loud because I know, just like myself, there's a lot of, we're afraid to say things out loud. And so I want to say things out loud to give people the freedom to say what they need to say to get it out of them. So, Yeah, you got to feel it to heal it.
That's it.
So I'm in a season of feeling things. It sucks, but it's good too. It's a beautiful thing.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you for giving us the time.
Yes, thank
and
you
I know
for
our relationship
me.
Will continue to grow.
I hope
and
so.
I am going to come out there to, I am.
Yeah, that's cool.
Recovered.
You might find some other people to, grow your podcast too.
Well,
so.
It's going to, hopefully it'll be an hour podcast type of thing. That's how I want this thing to be looked at.
Yeah.
You know?
So, all right. Well, thank you.
Well, awesome.
So,
thank you so much.
Right.
We'll see each other
sooner
than later.
Hope so. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
Great.
Thank you again, Jessica Apple, for sharing your courageous, raw, honest, incredible story. You are a survivor. Continue doing what you're doing. One person at a time. We cover loudly so few suffer in silence. If you or anyone you know is struggling, please reach out to Maddie I at staypositivewithmatthew@gmail.com. Private messenger me at Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and on TikTok, the Lose Control Podcast 1. Thank you again. For all the listeners, all the followers, let's keep growing this movement.
Thanks for joining us. The Lose Control Podcast is committed to you becoming part of a healthy tribe, and we will transform our lives together.